Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Leafs Blue Jackets tonight in Toronto. We'll have Darren Drigger on in the next couple minutes to go around the league, talk about all the action that we updated you on. Travis Dermott injured, Sandin injured, Marner injured. The list goes on. A couple NHL debuts tonight. But my dad just texted me and reminded me of something. That's kind of funny. It has to do with the Leafs versus the Blue Jackets. I'm from Thunder Bay, obviously. I never really saw the Leafs play. This was my first Leafs game. It was 2013. It was a Tuesday night. The Leafs played the Columbus Blue Jackets. To this point in my life, I've only ever been to the Excel Center in Minnesota. Like, I used to see the Minnesota Wild play a lot. Not a flex at all, because it was close, and I'd go to hockey tournaments there, and we'd, like, you could bring a whole team to a Minnesota Wild game, and it was sick.
Right.
Kind of. and so me and my dad has a doctor's appointment in Toronto. I go with him. His friend works for CIBC. We get to see the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Maple Leafs play. It's my first Leafs game. I've been a Leafs fan my whole entire life. And so my dad has never seen a game with me. It was I think the first time my dad saw the Leafs at the ACC. To that point, he'd only ever seen them at
the Gardens.
So we have incredible seats. To this day, I've never had good seats like this. In-seat service. I ordered nachos. I was kind of embarrassed when the nachos came because they were so big. The Leafs got shut out 6-0 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I didn't even hear the goal horn, AB. Like, I didn't even get to hear them score. I just looked up the stats from the game. Goaltender James Reimer allowed 6 goals on 21 shots.
Who's in net for Columbus?
Bobrovsky. Officer Bobrovsky was on the case.
Is that a resurgence this season?
Anyways, that's the story of my first Leafs game.
Tough Leaf debut.
Brutes.
I think the first Leaf game I went to was actually an overtime win against Carolina, like years and years ago. So a little bit of a better experience.
Yeah, mine was a Tuesday night in Toronto. The year was 2013. I was 15 years old, and they got shut out 6-0. Worst day ever.
Let's see who Dregs remembers his first Maple Leafs game. I think we got Dregs on the line. TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger. Dregs, do you recall your very first Maple Leaf game? Where was it? Who was playing? What was the final outcome?
I don't recall the final outcome, but I do recall it was at Maple Leaf Gardens. It was the Edmonton Oilers playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kelly Buchberger, who then was the captain of the Edmonton Oilers, he and I grew up together in Langeberg, Saskatchewan, and he married my best friend's sister, a good friend of mine as well. So we were real close buddies. I don't recall the score of that game. Might have had something to do with consumption, because I was there with a couple of other buddies from Saskatchewan, but that was, in fact, that was my first Toronto Maple Leaf game, and it was an old classy barn, the old Maple Leaf Gardens.
I will never forget mine. 6-0. Didn't even hear the goal horn. I was curious for years afterwards as to what the goal horn sounded like in person. Dregs, tons of news out of Leafs Morning Skate today. You reported about Mitch Marner. Keith said today it could be up to 4 weeks for Marner's shoulder injury. Where do you, obviously this is a massive loss for Toronto, but where do you expect this to hurt the most for Toronto? Special teams or the team's 5-on-5 offense?
Well, you know what? It depends on what happens with Jason Spezza, right? And
right.
The fact that he's got his in-person Zoom hearing at 1 o'clock today. If he's out 3, 4, 5-plus games, then, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs take a hit on both fronts. Obviously, he's been helpful on that power play in the absence of Mitch Marner. So, you know that, you know, not having him available is going to be a problem there, because you're missing on two fronts, Marner and with Jason Spezza. But, you know, Marner is such a creative player, and the chemistry with Austin Matthews is obvious. And I think Mike Bunting has been real good on that line as they continued to audition players on that left side. They seem to be developing something that is going to work moving forward. So, you know, you take Marner out of the equation, and now you've got to promote somebody. Not to say that that somebody can't be adequate or better on the short term, but what was supposed to be 1 or 2 weeks, I'm not going to lie, I got caught off by surprise. I was initially told it was going to be 2 weeks at most. Now you're talking about 3 weeks to a month. in not having Marner available, and that's gonna impact everything about the Toronto Maple Leafs game.
Well, it looks like Alex Steeves is going to make his NHL debut tonight. He's the guy that was tabbed and brought up from the AHL to kind of fill in. Not going to fill in on the up there, but fill into the lineup. But do you think this would have been a good opportunity to maybe give Josh Hosang a shot? Any indication of whether or not that option was considered by Toronto?
Well, I'm sure they continue to have conversations about that. He's on an American League contract, so it gets a little bit more complicated than that, right? You know, they've got time for Josh Hosang. One thing that Kyle Dubas and his management group have done well is providing an opportunity, you know, whether it's Galchenyuk, who eventually made his way to the Toronto Maple Leafs and didn't do too badly, to another reclamation project in Josh Hosang. I don't know that it was officially considered. I'm sure that they've had ongoing conversations about what to do, if anything, with Hosang, because he's played well at the AHL level, and you know, he's delivered on the promises that he made coming in. He just wanted a chance to try and rebuild his pro game, and I think that he continues to make the most of that. But organizationally speaking, I'm not surprised that they go with Steeves instead. Not saying that Hosang is never going to get his shot. It's just a bit more complicated contractually.
Right. Well, just like the news keeps coming out of the Leafs practice this morning. Travis Dermott didn't skate today. Sheldon Keefe said it was also a shoulder injury, just not as bad as Marner's. Do you have any idea when he could have sustained that or any more of a specific timeline on him?
I don't. No.
That was a bomb, eh?
By surprise as well. Yeah. Well, you got to wonder, and I didn't catch all of Sheldon Keefe's availability, so correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, he's done an interesting job, and this is just working with your depth and making sure that, you know, that 70 does get an opportunity to play, right? And so Liljegren sits for a bit, Dermott sits for a bit. Earlier in the season, it was Justin Hall sitting for a bit. And when the Hall-Dermott rumors of trade circulated, it was because Hall was a healthy scratch, and that caught a lot of general managers around the National Hockey League bit by surprise. I mean, they're not scouring over the Toronto Maple Leafs game tape every single game to see what players' minutes look like, to see who's in the lineup and who isn't. But when you've got a player like Hall who isn't playing, that catches the attention of other teams around the league. And Toronto, you know, was willing to listen to the interest, but for all the right reasons, just said, now, you know, unless somebody's going to step up and pay a premium for either Hall or Dermott, we're not going to do it because we're going to need that depth down the road. And here we are. You know, it's Dermott that evidently, according to the Leafs, has got a shoulder issue and he's sidelined. Don't know how long, but this is the very reason why you don't, you know, just jump into something, even though that there's interest. You, especially early in the year, teams are always looking to add on their blue line, and Toronto is no different. So we'll see what happens with Dermott. I don't get the sense, based on just a little poking around, that it's long-term, but I don't know that for sure yet.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, they didn't make that deal, because now, imagine they lose Dermott, they lose Sandin, imagine Hall's out of the lineup. You already have to put in Christian's Rubens. You had to go even deeper down into that defensive depth. But a couple injuries really starting to pile up, and another loss out of the lineup expected tonight with Jason Spezza, who has his in-person hearing today, as you mentioned earlier, for his hit to the head on Neil Pionk. What's your whole read on that situation? How many games do you think he's going to get for this?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, automatically when you're invited into a Zoom in-person hearing, what it means is that allows the National Hockey League to suspend for six or more. Mm-hmm. They don't have to. This doesn't feel like a 5-6 game suspension to me. It just, again, gives Department of Player Safety more time to dissect. Serious enough that they want to hear Jason Spezza's account, what he was trying to do. You know, because there is a retaliatory tone to this. You know, we could all see Spezza yelling from the bench. You know, the bench was outraged that there was no penalty called to Neil Pionk for the missed hit on Rasmus Sandin that ended up in a pretty serious knee collision, right? No penalty on the play, so, you know, the Leafs are upset, understandably, and Spezza is enraged. And then next opportunity he has, which isn't too far down the path, you know, he takes out Neil Pionk. Now, do I think that Jason Spezza had any intent of going after Pionk's head? Of course not. I mean, look at the character of this player, 1,200 games. I think he's got six or seven fights under his name on his stat line, and many of those are probably just wrestling matches. Don't think he's ever been fined, has he? So you're talking about a high character individual here, highly respected hockey player. And I think that George Parros and Department of Player Safety are going to take that into account. But they do have to measure case by case. And there's some evidence that doesn't look good for Spezza, starting with, you know, how angry he was on the bench and the fact that he made good on retaliation. So he's going to get suspended. Best guess for me is in that 3-4 game range. That would be best guess.
And I think that's what Julie and I were discussing yesterday. 3-4 games sounds about right. But, like, if you're not going to suspend for more than 5 games, like, why bother with the whole in-person hearing? Just get the 3-4 game suspension. Like, I just don't understand why you bother going through that whole process if you know you're not going to give him the amount of games necessary to have to do this in-person hearing.
Yeah, I think it speaks, though, Mike, to the severity of what they saw initially, right? Mm. I know that, you know, the Department of Player Safety, you know, thought that was a pretty significant infraction, more so than Pionk on Rasmus Sandin, obviously. I mean, Pionk had the hearing, and he got suspended 2 games. But as I said earlier, when you have the in-person, it's not just for the multi-offenders or the guys that have a longer rap sheet, be it suspension or otherwise. You know, and when you invite them into the in-person, it's because, you know, the incident in and of itself looked bad. And the optics that go all around it, starting with the yelling from the bench, and then very quickly, we're not talking about 5 minutes or 10 minutes. We're talking about, what, a minute or so after all of that? You know, Spezza seeks revenge and gets revenge in what turned out to be a very dangerous play. So I think you just invite the in-person to give Jason the opportunity to defend himself, to try and explain to Parros and company what he was trying to do in this case. And otherwise, if it's a different player, you know, you have the in-person probably knowing going in that it's going to be a 5-6, maybe even a 7-game suspension. I don't feel like that's the case here, but I can understand why the league would want to hear from Spezza just based on the optics of everything that went into that play.
That's Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. Ooh, I'm a little stuffed up there. That was weird.
Don't pull a Dreger on us.
I know, Dregs, it is almost fitting that I had you on the phone in that moment. I'm not sure. I'm sure you did hear Keith's comments this morning, but kind of in the same vein of player safety and lack of penalties, he drew a little bit of attention to the fact that Austin Matthews, and I was mind-boggled when AB and I fact-checked this and realized he was correct, has drawn 0 penalties this year. And course, this kind of reminds you of the situation out in Edmonton, where we heard the cries out there, and now all of a sudden Connor McDavid leads the league in penalties drawn. Do you think there was a little bit of an angle to Keith mentioning that this morning?
Oh, without question.
I mean,
come on. You know, if you're going to bait media, you do it in Toronto, you do it in Vancouver, you do it in Montreal. I mean, that's where you're going to get the best bang for your buck.
I took the worm.
So, there is no doubt that Sheldon Keefe was planting the seed. This is low-hanging fruit, man, and it is ripe. But I can tell you this. I'm not sure that Austin Matthews would appreciate it. He goes about his business. When's the last time you saw Austin Matthews, aside from getting mauled by Pierre-Luc Dubois, looking at the official going, like, what is going on here? I mean, but Austin Matthews doesn't beak at officials. He goes about his business. He does his job. You know, yeah, I'm sure he talks on the bench and probably in the dressing room, and there's some things about a game where he feels like he got hooked or held up, or in this case, mauled by Pierre-Luc Dubois that he doesn't love. But when's the last time you heard Austin Matthews complain about it publicly? You see him on the ice complaining about it. I mean, that was an extraordinary circumstance, you know, the Pierre-Luc Dubois scenario with Matthews. So, of course, he's going to speak about that. I'm not saying that he'd be upset with Sheldon for drawing attention to it, but, man, it's not going to hold him back. It's not going to hold him back. And, you know, could it help the team overall? Of course, more power plays puts a pretty good power play unit or units on the ice, and that can translate into wins. But I'm not sure Matthews would appreciate the attention that this is going to draw.
Maybe not, but I think like when you think about it, and in the same vein, it was really questionable that Connor McDavid had drawn so little penalties given the amount of time he has the puck and how good he is, how skilled he is, how fast he is, and kind of people have to clutch and grab to hold on to him, and it's just not getting called. You know, you think about Matthews, it's very similar. The guy's very puck dominant when he has it, and especially this season, scoring a lot of his goals in the dirty areas. He's going there. You'd think he would have at least grabbed a cross-checking call or something, especially since we know the NHL is looking to crack down on those cross-checks in front of the net.
All right, but I invite you to give me an example. Wow. Aside from the Pierre-Luc Dubois example. Like, give me another one. Like, and that's the problem with this stuff. Of course, the best players on the planet should draw more penalties just by virtue of being the most skilled out there, and to your point, Mike, having the puck more often. And I'm sure there have been missed calls on Matthews. I mean, that goes without saying. But now, you know, since Sheldon planted the seed, maybe the Toronto Maple Leafs media department or video department should put out an example. Give us the top 10 calls here that didn't go the way of the Maple Leafs against Austin Matthews. Again, it furthers my point that it's a remarkable statistic. Who's kidding who? Because of the virtue of the player here, it's just, I don't know that it's in the best interest of the team to talk about that, right? Because nobody in the media brought it to the attention of Toronto, I don't think. Like, he just essentially threw it out there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Or did somebody ask him the question about, is it surprising to you? Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, we've got a Leaf game tonight. I'm going to ask the Maple Leafs if they want to give us their top 10 missed calls on Austin Matthews and see if they bite.
Sounds like an Al's Brother power rankings. I should start taking a peek and getting in there. Last one for you, Dregs, before we let you go. This is more just a personal question, because I've heard this discussion come up a bunch. Like, oh, is this guy playing himself onto the Olympic roster A, Olympic roster B? And then I've also heard that, and this is what I'm trying to confirm with you, is it possible, if you were not on that long list, is it possible to play your way onto this? And one of the names that's starting to get floated around now is Tristan Jarry for Team Canada, and the way that he's played. Is he even able to play due to this long list and the Olympic testing that has to go about?
Yeah, I don't think so, but I can stand corrected on that too. It's a 55-person list that we know exists. But off the top of my head, I don't recall when it had to be submitted. I presume it's already been submitted.
I think it was in October.
Because because think about it, the Swedish Federation was looking for an exemption to get Lucas Raymond added to their list, right? And the pushback that I got from members of Team Canada and from Team USA was that, no, I mean, that's why it's a long list of 50 and 5 goalies. So if you weren't initially on that list, I don't think you can. But I'm not certain if that means you absolutely can, or if there's an injury exemption or all of that. I'm not entirely up to speed on the legalities of how it works. But, you know, with all due respect to Jarry, the Penguins are a good story right now. And, you know, good on Ron Hextall for not overreacting when everybody crowed last year when he got the job about improving his goaltending. Right now, their goaltending looks rock solid. And, you know, there are some questions in goal for both Team Canada and for Team USA.
Yeah, so I don't think he's able to, but that would suck because he's been one of the best Canadian goaltenders out there. He's been phenomenal. Yeah. All right, Dregs, really appreciate you joining us as always. We'll catch back up with you next week.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
There he goes, TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger. I recall hearing that there was that 6 goalies that were on the long list, and those were the 6 goalies that Canada would have to choose from. Carey Price is on that list, Marc-Andre Fleury, Binnington, Mackenzie Blackwood, and a couple other guys that are just slipping my mind right now, but Tristan Jarry was not on that list, clearly, after not playing well last year. I don't think anyone was anticipating a Vezina-esque season this year, but you could argue that he's been the best Canadian goaltender in the NHL, the best Canadian goaltender this season, and it would really be a shame if he couldn't go to the Olympics, and it's not looking like he will be able to.
Yeah, well, that bit about Raymond was pretty telling.
Yeah, him too.
Yeah.
Same exact situation. So I don't know if... I thought I heard it has to do with Olympic testing, because you have to submit to the doping tests every little bit, and at this
point... Oh, you said testing. My brain went COVID.
No,
yeah.
No. But remember that this came up with Tom Wilson, and he was like, yeah, I've been having to do all this doping and this testing and stuff. And that's kind of where this conversation about Lucas Raymond came up and why he may not be eligible for the Swedish Olympic team. And now the conversation, I hear people saying Tristan Jari playing his way into it. I don't know if he's eligible. I don't know this for fact, but obviously...
I don't know facts.
That's why I asked Dreger. And even he said he's pretty sure that's not the case, but there could be some exemption.
So much up in the air with this Olympic Games.
Well,
it's just insane.
May not even be in Olympic Games. Who knows?
It's just crazy.
It is crazy. All right, we're going to play some good call, bad call coming up next. Join us back here. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Jewel DeSherry. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050 is brought to you in part by LeaseBusters. Relief from your car lease. Go to LeaseBusters.com.
Hi, this is Julia Tesheri. I live downtown Toronto, and if you're like me, you see Frank Leo everywhere. He's all over your computer, on billboards, on buses. You see his double ad page in the newspaper. You see him on TV, and of course, you hear him right here on the radio. That's the multi-million dollar marketing system made to help you reach millions of potential buyers to help you sell your home for more money in less time with less hassle. Frank Leo is the only agent I would call if I needed to sell my home, because you need to market your property to the largest audience. It's your largest investment, and you want to make sure you don't take any chances and leave money on the table. Frank Leo, broker at RE/MAX West, will sell your home at a price and a deadline you agree to, or he'll buy it. Frank also provides a total service guarantee in writing. Contact my friends at Frank Leo & Associates, the number one RE/MAX team in Toronto and the GTA, with their guaranteed home selling system. Call 416-917-5466. That's 416-917-LION, or go to GetLeo.com. That's GetLeo.com, and you can start packing with confidence.
Number one in hairstyles.
If your comb-over bacon strip guy and the lady accidentally cuts down all of the foldovers...
Overdrive, Toronto's legends of the couch. Weekdays 4 to 7 on TSN 1050.
It's in the mirror and it's like, oh, I screwed it up. I swore you said left side.